Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. A major developing story in the sports and streaming space. Disney, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery joining forces to launch a joint streaming platform. The news breaking in just the last hour. New details coming out right now, or David Faber will be here with the latest. Plus, China rising, the Shanghai Composite seeing its best day in nearly 2 years, while ETFs tied to the region surge too. Can the moves by Beijing meaningfully help Chinese stocks rebound? We'll debate that. And later, just sell it. The Chartmaster is out with a bearish call on Nike shares of the shoe giant. We're up nearly 3% today. He'll tell us why he doesn't think this swoosh higher will last. I'm Melissa Lee coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq on the desk tonight. Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. And we start off with two big earnings movers after the bell. Shares of Ford jumping after the automaker topped estimates for the first quarter. Snap, on the other hand, plunging as much as 30% after it gave weak guidance for Q1. We'll get to those numbers in just a bit. But we do want to start off with the breaking news in the media space. ESPN, Fox, Warner Brothers teaming up to launch a sports streaming platform this year. Let's get straight to David Faber, who's got all the details right now. David.
Yeah, Melissa, this could be something that you can actually download as soon as the fall. At least that seems to be the hope of the three key partners here, who will be contributing all of their sports programming to this yet to be named entity. Now, I am told they're going to come up with a name soon. They're also going to have to come up with a price, of course. The idea here is to appeal to the ever-growing number of people who no longer have a cable subscription, particularly perhaps young men who like sports but don't want to pay $150 a month to have cable. And so wherever the price is, it obviously will be far below that number. And then they obviously as well, these consumers conceivably would also have their entertainment options via other direct-to-consumer apps that we know well. The two or three parties, my understanding is, have been talking for a bit of a period of time. Disney and Fox appear to agree to an initial deal. And in fact, Fox has something at least somewhat similar in Australia, is my understanding, called KO, which has brought together a number of sports programmers to distribute something in an app somewhat similar. They brought in Turner as well. And now you've got something that conceivably will appeal to a wide variety and breadth and depth of sport fans, given they're going to have all of hockey, pro football, basketball, baseball, all the playoffs, of course, of those. College sports in terms of almost all the big leagues, most of the NCAA tournament, golf, tennis, cycling, soccer, and on from there. Each of the partners will own a third of the entity, but important to point out here as well, that doesn't mean that they'll each get a third of the revenues. It's my understanding that, for example, ESPN, which has higher fees and pays more to sports leagues, will get, as it flows through, a higher percentage of the revenues conceivably from the new app. So while it will each be owned a third, that is the entity itself, the revenues will flow through to each of the partners in a different proportion. And the entity will not be bidding on sports rights on its own. It is simply an aggregation of the properties and a distribution mechanism to bring in more people. But each of the actual networks, ESPN, Turner, Fox Sports, will continue to bid on various sports rights. So not perhaps something that hasn't been thought about, but they are bringing this to fruition. The parties do seem quite enthusiastic, as you might imagine. And again, they hope to bring it as soon as this fall. It does not, Melissa, impact the continued conversations that ESPN proper is having with potential equity investors. It's something we've talked about for some time, for example, with the NFL, which might contribute some of its cable networks at some agreed upon valuation for a percentage ownership of ESPN. It's my understanding those talks continue. And it also doesn't impact the future plans that Disney has to have a direct-to-consumer offering of ESPN on its own. We may get more details, in fact, tomorrow when Disney reports earnings after the bell in terms of the timing. My understanding is the introduction of that product could be, let's call it, roughly a year or so away, and it would be sort of a different product than this one. But certainly an important moment. Melissa, that's the news as we have it right now.
Seems pretty confusing, David, at least at first blush. I mean, if these entities are going to be bidding on sports rights individually, you know, the first reaction that I think many people had to this news was that this would put sort of a lid on how high those prices were getting. But if each entity is going to bid themselves, well, first of all, would they still keep the lid on because they're bidding against each other and eventually it feeds into this one app, which they to some level share, or are they going to still be bidding in a very fierce and heated way because you earn those sports where you buy the sports rights and then you can put that on the linear channel as well?
That, I think, is the expectation, but I think your question is a good one. And you do have to wonder. Now, remember, they are also competing against the likes of Amazon and increasingly even perhaps Apple as well on certain of these sports rights. But my understanding, and again, why I made the distinction between the ownership structure and the revenue flow through, is that if you're paying more for certain sports, you're going to get a bigger percentage of the overall revenue from wherever this thing is priced in terms of the subscription fee, if you're ESPN, for example, as would be the case right now, and over time that may change. So that may perhaps also be impetus to continue to bid, not to mention, of course, being able to feed your linear networks, which are still of importance.
David, it's Karen. I'm a little bit confused. I thought at the top you said that they are contributing all of their sports, each of the three contributing all of their sports, but then you talked about ESPN, I think, being still a standalone.
Yes, it will be. In other words, if you have a cable subscription, you're still going to get ESPN. You're still paying for it. You're still getting it. So, but everything on ESPN will be available to the purchaser of this app, along with every sports that Fox offers and every sport that is offered by Warner Brothers Discovery, broadly speaking.
All right, Dave, we're going to let
sense?
You go.
Yeah.
I think it, I don't know, Karen's her look is a little puzzled. I think we'll try and sort this out with Rich Greenfield, who's waiting in the wings. David, we appreciate your reporting. Keep us posted.
I will. I'm sorry I left you confused. Rare. Never happens.
David Faber. Let's bring in Rich Greenfield of Lightshed Partners. Rich, maybe you can shed some light on this.
I mean, wow. We love shedding light, Melissa.
Yes. Let's
first shed the light. I think this is a $30 to $40 product. So let's start with price point. I know David was kind of asking that question. I think this is going to be something that's quite expensive. You know, you're talking about a lot of sports networks. And remember, this is not Hulu. So, like, this is not Hulu for sports, meaning it's not like it's only going to work when the sports are on television. I believe what this is taking the linear networks, whether we're talking Fox, whether we're talking Fox Sports, whether we're talking ESPN or TBS and TNT, I believe all of those networks are going to be part of this. And so while the focus is obviously sports, I believe all of the content on those networks will be on this service. So you're talking of, you know, because you have to have affiliates and pay affiliates, like retrans, this is going to be an expensive service, not YouTube TV expensive, which crossed 8 million subs today, but this is still going to be much more expensive than the Hulus, Disney Pluses, Netflixes of the world because of all of those sports rights that are bundled in here. The real question is, you know, if I think about winners and losers right now, this is obviously, you know, a nice positive step for fans. It's going to make it a little bit easier to access just the content they want if they don't care about a lot of the non-sports cable networks out there or even some of the smaller channels that are out there. It's clearly not a good thing for companies like Paramount, who are not being included in this. I'd say it's not good for NBC, although obviously within the size and scale of Comcast, I think it's less of a negative than it probably is for Paramount, which has, you know, been obviously the subject of a lot of M&A speculation recently.
Rich, November 8th, Disney reported fourth quarter. Amongst many things, Bob Iger said, we're committed to building ESPN into the preeminent digital sports platform. Is this part of that vision, or is this sort of coming out of left field to you?
I mean, it actually seems like sort of a pivot from there, doesn't it? I mean, it actually sounds like, hey, something that we've been talking pretty openly about is that having a single sports service, meaning ESPN on its own, yes, I love Monday Night Football. I like college football a lot, but, you know, the ratings are very heavy certainly focused around football season. How do you build something that people subscribe to all year? I think that's sort of what this acknowledges, that it's hard to have a service with just what ESPN has. So yes, as David pointed out, I certainly think there'll still be an ESPN direct to consumer, but I feel like this is an acknowledgement that for sports to really work, you need a larger bundle than what any one company sports can achieve. And I think if you were to talk, you know, I mean, think about what Fox for years has resisted launching its own streaming service, saying, we don't think a Fox streaming really works direct to consumer. They've waited, obviously, and are now putting it into this bundle, which I think is sort of what ESPN probably should have done from the beginning. It's hard to be on your own in the sports world because there isn't that sort of year-round viewership. Sports are very seasonal and very tribal. And so I think this makes a lot of sense to work together. Mm-hmm. Why they didn't include NBC and CBS, obviously, is a big question for these companies in the weeks ahead.
Hey, Rich, it's Tim. But who gets pulled up here? And it seems to me like Warner Brothers of the three gets pulled up. And it gets into this, pardon the pun on this, too. I mean, the flow through is not going to be linear in terms of the linear TV dynamic. In other words, so we know that they're not going to get paid equal amounts. But it does seem to me the other side of this is that I worry about Disney Plus, where there's a lot of people that had that bundle. And sure, they had Disney Plus, they had all the Disney stuff, but they really wanted more the access to the sports. But they took everything for a little bit more of a price. I would be worried about that.
Look, I think we're talking, you know, WBD. I think this is definitely a surprise that they're put into this group. You know, they don't have major NFL rights. And so I think that was sort of a piece that people were looking at it going, without football, are they as important? You know, I think there's been a lot of conversation. Does WBD need to merge with NBC Universal ultimately to basically have the power of the NFL? So this is really interesting that they're included. I think this is definitely a win for Zaslav to be included in this triumvirate that's going after the sports problem. Now, I will say, Tim, at a $30 to $40 price point, and it doesn't have CBS, you know, NFL rights, doesn't have, you know, sort of some of the Big Ten stuff that's on there, like doesn't have EPL, doesn't have Sunday Night Football. Yes, you can sign up for Peacock and Paramount Plus separately. But I do wonder, how appealing is this service? I think, you know, that's sort of the missing, you know, question is like, it isn't really the everything sports service. It's getting in the right direction. I think it's a tremendous step forward for the three management teams to actually start this and try to move forward with something innovative and different. I do have a question of like, what does this mean for Charter, Comcast, DirecTV? Like, how are they going to react? And they're going to say, why can't we bundle this exact same product? I think there's, you know, my guess is there are going to be a lot of questions being asked on conference calls over the course of the next few weeks about how can this actually be achieved relative to existing agreements.
Hey, Rich, it's Karen. Thanks for coming on. Is this something that would need antitrust approval?
Meaning to work together.
I mean,
it's a fascinating question. Karen, no one's asked me that, obviously, in the last 20 minutes. It's an interesting question of, you know, is there going to be any sort of attack on this is like working together? It's not the leagues themselves. Obviously, the companies have already done something like Hulu. So there's certainly precedent for working together. And I would say, you know, this is certainly not comprehensive in its control of sports rights. So it would surprise me if there was, but I would never say never. The one winner that I think we should be talking about, though, this would seem to be a huge win for the NBA and Adam Silver. Because if this really helps, as you mentioned before, if this is helping WBD be part of this, you have to believe that that means that WBD is going to retain rights for the NBA. Like, people were worried, we were worried that they would lose those rights. I can't imagine they're going to be part of this joint venture and not retain NBA rights. And so it probably means that both WBD and ESPN are paying up to retain NBA rights, which is clearly going to be a nice win for Adam Silver and the NBA.
Hey, Rich, it's Dan. Just let's say this thing launches for NFL. You mentioned the term NFL a lot. You know, I was just looking at my YouTube subscription. It's $73 a month. I pay $11 a month for ESPN Plus. I kind of have everything I need there, and it's all streaming. It's all over the top. It seems like this is going to be a very confusing offering, and depending upon how far ahead of time they get it out before the NFL, like, is this thing DOA? Is it just, like, to the point we weren't confused by David's reporting? We were confused by all the offerings and why it needs to exist, and why it needs to exist the way you just described it without a bunch of other stuff that you already get on YouTube TV.
The answer is yes. So I'm going to first say you're right, Dan, 100%. Two, I would say you do take YouTube TV and you don't have regional sports networks, right? Like, so there is sports content that isn't there. You couldn't watch the NFL, you know, the Travis Kelce Peacock game. You couldn't watch on your YouTube TV. You had to get Peacock. And so the need for multiple services, this fragmentation of sports, is a problem. Now, I think it is a positive that sort of the sports rights that are being owned by the three companies are being put into here. So incremental Big Ten streaming service, ESPN Plus is all being put in. So it isn't separate, but you're 100% right. This does not solve the one-stop shop for all sports rights for a sports fan. YouTube TV is still better. It's obviously more expensive, but even there, you said you're subscribing to ESPN Plus in addition. So there is no magic bullet for sports. I think the one clear standout here is the loser is going to be basic cable and entertainment channels that are not part of this package are going to have yet one more headwind and create even more challenges for these legacy media companies that don't have their channels in here.
Rich, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Rich, it's exhausting and confusing.
It really is. It really is. By the way, don't miss an exclusive interview with Disney CEO Bob Iger. That's tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern time, right here on CNBC, when Disney reports earnings. So let's start off with that. Why is Disney the one that's trading lower, Tim?
Well, first of all, the intrinsic value or the sum of the parts on Disney and what they were going to do with Disney at one point was a real catalyst to Disney shares, to ESPN. So what was ESPN going to be worth? And as Guy pointed out, I mean, Bob Iger's made it clear that there was a very strategic dynamic here. I think that's part of it. I think to the extent that look, some of the differentiation of Disney to me is that product. And so when they've started to merge, but I don't know where I can come up with the quantitative analysis on this. It's only qualitative, but I do think that the Disney Plus bundle that includes ESPN Plus is something that pulls in a lot of sports fans that might not otherwise have Disney, and I'm one of them.
At the same time, Rich made an interesting point in that sports is tribal, right? So you like a certain thing and you have a certain app because you like that season of sports. It's hard to build a year-round product. They're creating a year-round product. So if sports, if you're only going to watch certain sports for certain seasons, you're still not solving for that problem because why would you pay for everything else if you don't normally watch everything else?
Well, so I guess this cannibalization problem, right? If you this is the one-stop shop, do you need the half stop?
That's
right.
Yeah.
That is the I don't understand.
Right. It's not like I'll subscribe to this and I'm going to start watching whatever it is besides college football. You know, I don't know. Maybe that happens, but it seems like to Rich's point, people like what they like. They want to follow the teams that they want to follow. They want to follow the leagues. They want to follow certain seasons, and you subscribe accordingly.
Yeah, and I'll go back to the question you asked Tim because that's what I'm sort of honing in on. Yeah. Like, this doesn't happen without ESPN. There's no way, right? So Disney obviously had to get involved in this. So the question is, why would they do that if ESPN, and I'm not saying they're the crown jewel, but clearly they wanted to build upon that last quarter. Something has changed, I think, over the last month and a half that obviously it's, you know, way beyond my pay grade. I'll say this. Disney's traded pretty well since that last quarter. It was trading 84 into the quarter, got up to 99 today. Now they really have to answer some questions tomorrow.
You know, it's interesting. David Faber mentioned that this is going after maybe a demo. So younger men who just like a lot of sports, and they're also doing a lot of sports gambling. And so when I hear this all the time, I'm not a sports gambler, but you hear about the streaming services.
That's surprising to me, by the way.
I did gamble a little bit on the NFL. He knows this. I went 33-10-3 in the last month of the season.
Oh, I mean,
that was
okay.
Pretty good. No, I'm just saying, it's all documented on my DraftKings account. But I'll just say this. But here's the deal. There's a latency problem with the streamers, right? So when you're watching it, you know, through traditional cable, through so people don't like it because there's a lot of in-game gambling and the like here. So to me, I think that like that's a kind of really interesting issue. If you're going after that demographic, they want to be watching it on TV. They don't want to be watching it on a streamer.
maybe they're sweating out against Disney. So Disney's and all these three are sweating it out against Amazon, Apple, and Google. I mean, you know, the world of the sports media landscape is changing a lot. And that may be part of this, too.
I just think it would be hard to wrestle these three to a deal, right, where they each have their different revenue streams. They each have their different contributions. They got to figure out how to price.
The revenue streams would presumably change, you know, potentially quarter to quarter.
Yes.
Season to season, mm-hmm. whatever it is. And that's going to adjust every single time. It seems kind of complicated. For one third, one third.
I'll say this, you know, you watch the World Series, and you have to go from TBS one night over to ABC one night, Fox another. I mean, madness.
But the good news is, if you're a Met fan, you don't have to watch.
Well, hold on, just really, really quickly. I know you guys want to get out. Guys, but this is actually what Apple TV does well. This is what those aggregators do well. They're all logged in there, so it is serving as an interface. So we're back to the bundling, unbundling, bundling, bundling, and now it's getting a lot more confusing.
Mets, by the way, in a World Series in 2015, Yanks last in 2009.
Yeah, sorry, we won
folks.
In 09.
We talk the truth here.
Anyway, coming up, a number of names on the move in the after-hour session four, jumping after reporting results, a burrito blowout for Chipotle, and Snap shares plummeting after its earnings report. We'll go inside all the numbers. More Fast Money in two.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Ford. Shares are popping after the automaker topped earnings and revenue estimates for the latest quarter. The company also giving strong guidance for the year. Phil LeBeau joins us with all the details. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Melissa. A very nice report if you are a Ford investor, especially when you look at the guidance for 2024. We'll talk about that in just a bit. Let's look at the Q4 results. Better than expected, beating the street on the top and the bottom line by a wide margin, earning 29 cents a share. Street expecting 14 cents. Revenue, $3 billion better than expected. And the businesses, when you look at each of them, two of the three delivered nice numbers. First of all, commercial vehicles. We have said this time and again, Ford Pro is killing it. And they once again delivered in the fourth quarter, $1.81 billion profit. ICE and hybrid business, $813 million. EVs, they continue to lose money there, $1.5 billion. By the way, CFO John Lawler just said on the conference call, they expect to lose money on EVs this year as well. But here he is last hour talking to us about his view of where the market is right now and Ford's position.
We have an incredible commercial business, which was up 20% this year. We expect it to grow again in 2024. Our ICE business, Ford Blue, is doing very well. It grew the last 2 years. Profits were up. And, you know, we at Ford have an incredible position because we can offer our consumers choice across all powertrains, ICE, HEVs, and electric vehicles. So we cover the broad spectrum of what consumers want.
All right, here's the guidance for 2024. Adjusted EBIT range of $10 to $12 billion. Free cash flow this year expected to come in $6 to $7 billion. CapEx between $8 and $9.5 billion. And as you take a look at shares of Ford over the last year, two other notes here. If you are a Ford shareholder, you've got two dividends coming your way. One in the first quarter for 15 cents a share, and then a special dividend. The company has just announced it'll also be awarded in the first quarter, a little bit later on in the quarter, 18 cents a share. Any way you look at this, Melissa, this is the kind of report that Ford investors were looking for. Some reaffirmation in terms of both the commercial vehicle as well as the ICE hybrid business. That's where they've made their money, and they're planning to make real big money in those two areas this year as they continue to do that pivot towards EVs, or away from EVs, but more towards hybrids, because that's where the demand is.
I thought it was interesting, too, Phil, that Ford said that they're going to defer certain capital investments until, you know, in EVs until demand justifies it. So they're acknowledging it in terms of the spend that they had planned.
Yeah. And they already said, what, a couple of months ago that they were going to defer about $12 billion in EV investment to some point in the future. And they said at that time, which they reiterated today, which is, we are going to be very judicious when it comes to making EV investments. Not giving up on EVs, but if the market's not there, they're not just going to pour money into it.
Yep. Phil, thank you.
You
Phil
bet.
LeBeau. So let's say interest rates were an issue for a lot of the automakers, and they've peaked. Let's say labor costs were a big question mark, but now the strike is settled. So you had two major headwinds in 2023, and they're in the rearview mirror, so to speak.
Well, there's a couple of things, and I, you know, as a Ford shareholder, I do like a 2.5% div yield now. When you add in that interim div, is what it works out to me. It also seems like the auto companies were holding back some goodies from the unions during a pretty painful and pugnacious exchange. I think it's a case where if you look at this company on those cost savings, they're talking about $2 billion in global cost savings, and you look at the free cash flow that they've guided for. It's adjusted free cash flow, so I don't know what it's adjusted for, but $6 to $7 billion or $6.5 billion in the middle on a $48 billion market cap means this is a really high free cash flow yield for a company that people thought was really inefficient. They're talking about an ROIC of 20%, up from 14. So this is a new age for a company that a couple of years, or about a year, year and a half ago, clumsily told us what they were doing wrong. I think they were very honest with it. And I think, you know, this is a real turnaround.
These are tech-like moves in the after hours for automakers.
Yes.
And we had Ford up 6%+. We had GM up almost 10% in the after hours on its earnings before.
Right. Well, so I think the narrative has changed completely from this is a melting ice cube business.
Pardon the
expression. Pun intended. What?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yes. Cube,
ice,
yeah.
Right.
Ice, ice,
now it's icy hot, to use a Shaquille O'Neal reference, I guess. So that those multiples of mid-single digits are re-rating, and they probably should never have been there.
Let's get to Snap now. Shares of the social media company plummeting 30% after reporting a revenue miss for the fourth quarter. It also gave light guidance for Q1. Julia Borson's got all the details. Julia.
Yeah, look at those shares of Snap down over 30% now. That's really dragged down by a revenue miss and also first quarter guidance of a much larger loss than analysts had anticipated. The company guiding to a first quarter EBITDA loss in a range of $55 million to $95 million. The consensus was for a loss of $22 million. Now, this comes after the company reported fourth quarter earnings of 8 cents per share. That was 2 cents better than anticipated, and adjusted EBITDA in a range way above estimates. But the company warning, quote, "We estimate that the onset of the conflict in the Middle East was a headwind to year-over-year growth of approximately 2 percentage points in the fourth quarter." On the upside, the company said that its user growth was ahead of expectations and announced that Snapchat Plus, which hit 7 million subscribers, finished the year with an annualized revenue run rate of $249 million. That is the first time we've gotten revenue numbers on this subscription service. Now, while we see the stock down, we have to note some bright points pointed out by Evan Spiegel, the CEO of Snap, saying they made progress with small and medium-sized advertisers as well as the ad platform. We'll have lots of questions for Evan Spiegel when we talk to him in an exclusive interview that's tomorrow morning in Money Movers. Melissa?
Julia, thank you. Julia Borson, let's go to the chief Snap trader on this desk. That'd be Dan Nathan.
Oh, really? Fair enough. All right. So the stock doubled, right, in the last few months. And it just, you know, it was left for dead in the fall. And people got pretty excited about just, I don't know what they got excited about. When you think about Meta and you think about the monetization, you think about their ad serving and all the stuff that has been exciting in and around that story and their ability to harness the technology they've been investing in. And it demonstrated in that quarter, in that result. And that's why you had that that gap higher. Snap is obviously not doing that same level investment. And, you know, to me, it's a really hard one. You know, TikTok has been eating their lunch over the last couple of years. They've been cutting costs pretty dramatically. And so it's kind of showing in the product and their ability to monetize those users. So to me, it's a hard one. I'll just say this. And we've done this, I think, almost every quarter. You know, the stock gaps down 20-30%, like routinely. Wait a few days and then you buy it. And then it kind of fills in the gap over the next couple of months. I know that sounds really cavalier. The last thing I'll just say is, if these guys are doing this poorly, I can't imagine how badly Twitter is doing.
Coming up, a burrito blowout for Chipotle. Shares of the fast casual chain jumping after its latest earnings report. We've got the details in the quarter next. Plus, the China trade stock surging as talks of stimulus come into focus. How to play that move ahead. Back right after this.
Every day, thousands of Comcast engineers and technologists put people at the heart of everything they create, like Olu Sheyi, a Comcast engineer who grew up bonding with his dad over sports. This inspired him and his team to create AI Highlights technology that uses AI and machine learning to detect the major plays in a sporting event, so millions of fans have a way of catching up on their favorite sports. Learn more at ComcastCorporation.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Chipotle higher in extended hours after reporting a beat on the top and the bottom lines. Let's get to Kate Rogers for more. Kate.
Melissa, Chipotle with a big Q4 beating, as you said, on the top and bottom line. Same store sales also coming in much higher than estimates at 8.4%. That's thanks to a big traffic bump of up over 7%, to a lesser extent, price hikes. The company said food costs did increase due to a higher mix of beef as well as inflation across its menu, most notably on beef, of course, produce and queso. For 2024, CMG guiding full-year comparable restaurant sales growth in the mid-single-digit range and 285 to 315 new restaurant openings. Now, on the call, which just wrapped, CEO Brian Nichols said that they plan to pilot some of their automated digital make line, including the Autocado, which scoops and peels those avocados, rather, in 2024. He added that the return of carne asada for a limited time also outperformed expectations, as did its chicken al pastor. There are 1 to 2 limited time offers on the way for this year. No decisions have been made yet on price hikes as a result of the $20 an hour minimum wage coming in California in April, where Chipotle has 15% of its locations. One more interesting thing, Nichols said, they are gaining sales traction with every consumer income cohort, which is something that you just do not hear in the sector, particularly at this point in time. Melissa, back over to you.
Kate, did you say that they're considering more price hikes? I'm just wondering, like, year on year, how much have prices gone up on their menu?
They don't do it every quarter, Melissa. They last did it in the fall, and now they're considering a price hike given this $20 an hour minimum wage hike in April, but they didn't give the year-on-year number yet because they haven't decided what it's going to be. But they have about 15% of their locations out here in California, which is a sizable number, and so they will wind up feeling that, and consumers likely will as well.
All right. Kate, thank you. Kate Rogers. Burrito blowout.
No.
As we like to say.
That's a blowout. And Mr. Nichols is a huge fan.
And you would know? Is that
everybody here in terms of blowouts, I would know. Listen, 300 new stores this year. Operating margins much better than expected. Restaurant margins, different number, much better than expected. I mean, the EPS was an absolute blowout, and they're integrating technology.
Autocado.
I can't say that, but good for them. Margins will continue to improve. I think digital's now 36% of overall revenues. That's a good sign. Look, I mean, that's the question, right? Do you buy it here?
Yes.
I mean, at 47 times, it's always been expensive.
Eli Lilly.
It's always been expensive. And at McDonald's, they're watching as well. They rue the day that they spun out Chipotle.
Yeah, I mean, a lot to love, right? Same store sales, unit growth, ticket growth, all of that. Great. It all comes down to the same thing. This happens every single time. You talk about Snap being all over the place. Chipotle is almost never all over the place. They're always better, 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 which makes me think they sort of have more control over their revenue and bottom line than chance, right? It's a lot better than that. But I come down to the 46, as I've said for many, many quarters. Too expensive, can't own it.
All right. Coming up, we're giving Lilly a look. The pharma stock losing steam after an initial earnings bump, the numbers they posted, and how the weight loss drug boom is shaping that trade ahead. But first, China stocks catching a bid in a big way as the government steps up intervention in the market. But can the rally last? We'll ask one top expert. More Fast Money in 2. Welcome back to Fast Money. The S&P bouncing in and out of negative territory before ultimately finishing higher its third positive session for the Dow climbing 141 points and the Nasdaq squeezing out a small gain as well. Some more after hours action, VF Corp and Gilead both dropping after their reports, while Elf Beauty and Yum China both higher. Shares of Boeing higher today despite regulators from the NTSB saying bolts were missing from the 737 MAX door that blew off mid-flight in early January. Boeing shares down nearly 15% since that incident. Meanwhile, Chinese markets on a tear today. The FXI and MCHI each having their best day since January of last year. The KWEB, the best day since July. That's after a major sovereign wealth fund said it was expanding its purchase of ETFs. Our next guest calls today's rally a short-term exuberance. DeWardrick McNeil is senior policy analyst and managing director at Longview Global and a CNBC contributor. DeWardrick, always great to see you. Of course, there are a number of measures that China regulators were going to talk to President Xi Jinping about. So the president actually getting a briefing about the markets, particularly the timing of it ahead of the Lunar New Year. Are you optimistic that there will be more measures unveiled?
Well, I think let's just start with this one market intervention, Melissa. I think that unfortunately, this is probably just a short-term sugar rush as we're seeing heavy intervention by the Chinese state. I hope that we're going to see a larger focus on the broader economy, not just equity markets, because I think what's missing here, Melissa, is some sort of confidence that is going to be injected into consumers, the private sector, and we have yet to see the government really willing to pull back the layers of what I think is needed in the mainline economy, not equity markets. And until we see that, I think this short-term exuberance, as I call it, will fizzle at some point, because this is not the real challenge that China is facing at the moment.
Twitter, I kind of agree with you on that, although I do think there's a rationale for buying a lot of these companies. And it gets back to, if I didn't think that these policy officials were not who they are, dyed in the wool, in many cases, they're communists, I would almost think that they're traitors. Because instead of having to buy back your shares and support your market, how about not beating up your companies? And ultimately, this is a case where I just think that's really the issue. And it's not even the Chinese economy that's the reason that Baba, Tencent, and co. are trading where they are. So, I mean, do you think they have any understanding of this dynamic? Forget that they actually should be supporting their shares.
Well, Tim, I'm glad it's you, because I wanted to talk to you about Baba. I know you have a real interest there. I think Baba has legs to run for a whole host of reasons. I think the announcements around Eddie Wu taking over Tmall and Taobao. I think Jack Ma and Joe Tsai buying up shares. But when it comes to larger equities, Tim, I think the real question I have is whether or not the other goal that the government has, which is bringing foreign investors back to this market because there's a bottom. I don't know that I see a bottom here mm-hmm. at all, Tim. So that would be my concern. But the real question, whether or not FOMO, the fear of missing out, is a stronger draw than what I call FOTCOM, which is the fear of what's to come. And that's where I'm always hesitant about the Chinese market, equity markets as well, because I just don't know what's around the corner.
Fear of F-O-W, what's T-C?
It's
very catchy word.
He's bad at the game, too. He might be right, exactly, but he's...
It doesn't roll off the tongue at all, DeWardrick, but we'll let you work on that. Some would argue, though, that the Chinese government is actually going about this in the smart way, because the old playbook was to throw money at whatever sector was failing, and that, in turn, you know, developed into a property bubble, and what we have right here. Here, they're letting some people fail. They're letting some companies go under. They're sort of letting the rationalization happen, maybe in the long run. Do you think in the long run that's actually better for the Chinese economy?
I think until we have some answers, Melissa, on how we deal with the mainline Chinese economy and the issues around what they really need is a new growth model here. We've talked about this over and over and over again. I think monetary policy and monetary easing, which we've seen for the last 6 months, it's not working. And so I know this is not popular, but I've been talking for quite some time about cash payments to households. This is not popular by many economists, and Xi Jinping himself considers this to be welfareism. But at some point, you have to try something different to get the mainline economy going. And this overfocus on the equity markets, I don't think is the answer.
DeWardrick, thank you. Always good to see you. DeWardrick McNeil, Longview Global.
I think Dan's feeling a little bit left out. I want to point out that Baba is the bee and zebra.
Thank you.
Well.
Come
on, I'm sorry. Right.
Oddly not in your clam, though.
Excuse me?
No, but you've been talking about the Baba. You've been pounding the table on the Baba.
Yeah, but you can't shove a bee in a clam.
He'd have a problem.
There's the zebra. Look at that. Yeah. See, finally. Thank you, Tim. Yeah. Real team player.
Just felt like it was time.
But you think that Baba will go higher on earnings, even if the sugar rush doesn't work?
I do. I look at a few things in terms of also what we've started to see with some of the seasonal dynamics, what we've seen in some of the market cap in cash, some of the earnings multiples. I mean, the analyst community doesn't need to get a whole lot more even stimulus from the top down to find the valuation compelling.
Coming up, Eli Lilly reversing after hitting another all-time high. What sent the shares lower and what could be the next big thing in the pipeline for the company? Plus, just sell it. Nike jumping nearly 3% today. But the Chartmaster says it might be time to bench the sportswear giant. We'll find out why. Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Eli Lilly ending the day lower after hitting an all-time high earlier in the session. The initial boost coming after the company beat revenue and profit expectations for the latest quarter. The pharma giant also reporting that sales of its diabetes drug Mounjaro were nearly 10 times higher than the same quarter in 2022, and that sales of its weight loss drug Zepbound hit nearly $200 million. It was just released for sale at the beginning of December. It was the first earnings report to include results for Zepbound, which some analysts think could be the best-selling drug of all time. So in yesterday's session, it hit an all-time high. Today's session, an all-time high. It pulled back. Is it just because of where it was, or was there something, do you think, in the call, in the release, that sparked it?
I think it's just where it was. I mean, it was up yesterday, I think, in front of this.
Yes.
So it was just sort of a reversal of that. And obviously, it's been up just an enormous amount. And we're only one quarter in.
Of
not even a quarter.
No.
We're in 1 month.
1.5 months.
Right. And so it more than that is in the stock, but we're still early in this story. So it's volatile, but I'm hanging on.
Yeah. They also talked about the phase two for fatty liver, the trial, and the results were good, according to the analyst community. So that's another positive in that column for you.
Without question. I mean, it's a valuation concern, right? When you see, listen, traded more than usual volume, I think 1.5, almost 2 times normal volume, on a day where it made an all-time high in reverse, closed unched on the day-ish, maybe slightly lower. That's something to take into consideration. We could look back on today and say that was a day that Eli Lilly set up for that 15 to 20% drop that we've seen before. And I'll stand by that. And I think you're going to get a better entry point here. I'm not saying go short Eli Lilly. I'm saying you got to find a place to buy it, and I think you're going to get a better entry on the downside.
Coming up, time to just sell it. The athletic footwear and apparel maker stomping higher today, but the Chartmaster thinks this one might be a sinker. He'll make the case. More Fast Money in two. Shares of Nike closing higher today, but the stock is down nearly 19% in the last year, and the Chartmaster thinks it's time to just sell it. Mm. Let's bring him in now to break down the technicals of the trade. Carter Braxton-Worth, are worth charting. What do you see?
Well, for starters, we know this is a great long-term winner. Let's look at the very first chart. Of course, since its IPO some 45 years ago in December of 1980, this is stocks up 20x that of the S&P. But that all-data trend line is being breached. You can see it right there. Second chart, we can annotate the lines a different way. You have this, what you'd call converging trend lines since the COVID low, and we're at risk of breaching. Let's look at that formation shorter term, and you'll see that here. So the question is, do we or don't we break the lows? The real problem is this. When you drop 55% during the 2022 sell-off and the S&P drops 27, and now the S&P is up 40 and you're up only 20, you have to climb back 75% to make a new high. The S&P is at new highs. Another iteration, just to make the same conclusion a different way. This is what a topping out formation looks like. And then, of course, speaking to the issue of being so far behind the S&P final chart, look at the relative strength line. This is simply a ratio chart, one thing divided by another, Nike divided by S&P, which gives you a relative strength line, a relative performance line. We're just making new 52-E lows each day. Why be in something like this when there's so many things that are good?
Carter, thanks. Good to see you. Carter Braxton-Worth of Worth Charting. Tim, what do you think?
I think he's right. I think Nike is also just a tremendous franchise. But I've traded this stock both long term, and I've had a really great experience owning Nike. But I've also been able to short it at different times. I'm flat in the position. I think Lululemon is a name that also is a world class company. They're also growing internationally. They have a lot of drivers there. I just don't like the valuation here for discretionary. I think they had one of their greatest 2-year periods ever. I'm short there. I'm not betting the farm, but I do think I'm going to get it back lower.
December highs, we just made 126, were the same highs we made back in April. So it's had trouble at those levels. And it goes down a lot faster. You know, grinds higher, takes basically the elevator down. I think we're there again. You can probably get this stock 97 or so looking at the charts.
Up next, final trades. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Tim.
We talked about Ford. Guess who's up in the after hours on the back of Ford? And I think these two are going to pull each other higher. GM.
Karen.
Yes. I actually forgot for a second. No, not General Motors. Is that what
XLE?
That said?
It could be the XLE,
yes,
maybe.
It was the XLE. So yeah. Like, that was my final trade. Energy. It's in the Helm trade. It's the X in Helm.
Again.
Well played.
Yeah. Did not
well
prepare
played.
The game well at all. Dan.
Yeah, Snap went in October from like 8.5 up here until 17 or so. It's trading down to 12. It probably has lower lows. Wait a few days, though. It probably fills in a bit of that gap over the next couple of days.
Guy.
Setting myself up for a fast fire. Wind reports after the bell tomorrow, but you stay with it, Melms.
Thanks for watching Fast. See you back here tomorrow at 5. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island is now open weekends.